Tonight we're looking at Exodus 20, verse 13, as we continue working through the Ten Commandments. Tonight we are on the sixth commandment, known most well from the King James language, "Thou shalt not kill." But the English Standard Version and numerous newer translations translate it as, "You shall not murder." I do hope you enjoy these large Ten Commandments tablets we have behind me here. They were doing some cleaning the last week or two and discovered those. And I said, hey, let's use those things. I think those are awesome. I may just start carrying those out on the street corner and just standing out there, make a sandwich sign out of it or something, and just walk up and down with a big bell yelling at people. Just kidding. You shall not murder. Exodus 20, 13. You shall not murder. The sixth commandment. I quote William Faulkner too much, I know. But in the words of William Faulkner, in his novel, The Unvanquished, one of the characters says this about the sixth commandment. He writes, "If there was anything at all in the book, the Bible, anything of hope and peace for his blind and bewildered spawn, which he had chosen above all others to offer immortality, thou shalt not kill must be it." In other words, the character was saying that at the very foundation of any society in which anything like peace and happiness was possibly attainable, thou shalt not kill had to play a very prominent role. I think, in response to that, that there's a great deal more hope and peace in the Bible than just the sixth commandment. But the sixth commandment is one of those foundational tenets that rest at the heart of many legal codes in Western society and indeed throughout the world. One of the things that most societies tend to agree on is that there must be some kind of restrictions on who we kill. C.S. Lewis said, "You can find societies that disagree on who it is permissible to kill, but it is very rare to find a society who actually believes you can kill whomever you would want, whenever you want to." Most societies understand that one of the very safeguards against outright anarchy is a prohibition against the instinctive desire to kill. And yet this sounds so very, very simple, especially the King James rendering of it, "thou shalt not kill." There are people who take that as a kind of wooden blanket across the board prohibition against any and all forms of killing, regardless of any external factors that may change the dynamics and may potentially even justify the killing of another. There may be some of you in this room who feel that way, who are what you would call consistent pacifists, who believe that literally any killing at all, ever, is a sin in the eyes of God. Others would suggest that that is not what the commandment is saying for certain reasons, most of which born out of the text itself, out of the Bible itself, and would look to things like, say, God's allowance of killing and God's outright command for his people to kill in certain circumstances, to kill others, the possible biblical justification of measured state killing in certain circumstances. I mean, capital punishment and things like this, the very ethics of war, are just traditional difficult subjects for the church to wrestle with. And if I were to open it up to the floor, I promise you that we would have disagreement. Probably not as much as we would have in areas that are less homogeneous. I mean, in Arkansas, in the South, we still, in Southern Baptist churches, have a somewhat homogeneous principle at work in terms of our understanding of ethics. Probably most of us in here would say that it is permissible at times for, say, the military to kill. That this commandment does not mean that a soldier should not take up arms. Probably, I would bet, most of you would say that there are times when it is a sin not to kill. For instance, if a powerful despot is killing the weak, is it a sin not to stop that person, even to the point of killing an evil man. Some of you would, no doubt, probably most of us would wrestle somewhat with the ethics of capital punishment. Some of you would say that any and all capital punishment is wrong, always and ever. Some of you would say, no, there are tragically, unfortunately, in a fallen world, circumstances in which this is permissible. So while there's probably a good deal of agreement in this room, there's probably some disagreement as well. And I just know that anecdotally, like you do as well. If you talk to people in the church about the ethics of killing, when is it permissible to kill, is a powerful question. And a very McCabe question, but a question that we frankly must ask ourselves in a fallen world. Under what circumstances is it permissible to kill, or is it ever permissible to kill? Well, the first thing I'd like us to consider is this, concerning the meaning of kill. Before we can ask what the sixth commandment means, we need to ask what it actually says. What does it actually say? Why is it that translations are all over the place on this? Many of them say, thou shalt not kill. Many of them, like the English Standard Version and many others, say, you shall not murder. Well, one of the problems is that the Hebrew language contains numerous words for killing, and they seem in context to have different meanings. And simply put, the sixth commandment does not use the word for kill with the widest range of meaning. It seems to have at its heart the basic meaning of unlawful taking of life in the way that it's used. Let me share with you some insights from some Old Testament scholars who know the Hebrew language well. Philip Ryken, for instance, says that the Hebrew language has at least 8 different words for killing. The word for killing used in Exodus 20:13 is razak or resa. Depends on how you construe the Hebrew there, different ways of pronouncing that. That word seems to mean, he says, quote, the unjust killing of a legally innocent life. The unjust killing of a legally innocent life. Now, what's interesting is Ryken traced the usages of razak, which is the Hebrew word for killing used in the sixth commandment. And he found something very interesting, that if you trace that word through the Old Testament, it seems to have 2 basic meanings. The one sense, it refers to just outright simple murder, when someone goes up and just murders someone. That's razak. Although the Old Testament also uses that word in reference to involuntary manslaughter. If you accidentally kill someone, it uses that word. The cities of refuge in the Old Testament, where you could flee if you accidentally killed someone and receive safe harbor, the word used in describing the city of refuge is the same word here. However, the context of the commandment would seem to lean more towards the first explanation than the second. It does not seem that involuntarily or accidentally killing someone would have been viewed as the same way as intentionally murdering someone. And we know this in our society today. I have a friend who in high school was hunting late one night and fell asleep driving his truck home. Absolutely no alcohol consumption. There was no question on that. And he didn't drink, but they did the test and everything. He just fell asleep. His truck crossed the line, he hit a car and killed 3 people. Now, it was a real tragic thing. He was a few years younger than me, just a real sweet kid and a great guy, great Christian family. But the family there forgave him. I would suspect most of us recognize that situation, while careless, it's not completely without blame. You could say, for instance, that a person who is that sleepy is acting irresponsibly. That's a legitimate thing to say. Acting irresponsibly to get behind the wheel of the car. But we know that that is different than, say, that young man following that family home and gunning them down in their front yard. We know that. We know instinctively that's different. So what the sixth commandment seems to be leaning towards is the first meaning of razak, which means to unlawfully take innocent life. William Propp said this. He translated it as don't murder. And he, in fact, said that the King James translation, thou shalt not kill, is, quote, misleading. And he said, if you look at the Old Testament usage of that word, thou shalt not kill is, quote, far too broad. And he said the word actually means to illegally to kill a human being. And lastly, Douglas Stewart said this, Old Testament scholar Douglas Stewart. He said that this word for kill is, quote, specific to putting to death improperly for selfish reasons rather than with authorization, as in killing in the administration of justice or killing in divinely ordained holy war. And he translates the commandment, never murder. Well, one of the problems with doing what I'm doing right now is that well-meaning people will look at what I've done over the last 4 or 5 minutes and say, see, there you go. You have a simple commandment and you're hedging your bets. You're hedging your bets. The commandment says, thou shalt not kill. I was struck by this. This kind of simplistic interpretation is present. I don't know if any of you saw the Irish film Calvary last year. I thought it was an unbelievably powerful, beautiful film. Mrs. Richardson absolutely hated it, I think, and is tired of me talking about it. But it is not, again, not put out by the Sunday School Board, so please, please take caution. It is an Irish film, but it's a film about a priest who is a good priest. He's a good man. He's an Irish priest. He's in a little whatever they call village or something over there. And it opens with him in the confessional booth, and a man is talking to him. He can't see the man. And the man says to him that he tells him that he, the man, was sexually abused by a priest as a boy throughout his life. Crimes were committed against him. And he says to the priest, who's the hero of the movie, again, a good man, he says to this priest, he says, in 7 days, I want you to come to the beach and I'm going to kill you. He said, I'm going to kill you because you've done nothing wrong. He said, killing a bad priest is nothing but killing a good priest. I'm going to let you pay for the sins of the other priests. And so the movie is working all of that out. But there's a scene in which the priest, Father James Lavell, is talking to one of his parishioners, Milo Herlihy, and he is talking about the sixth commandment. And this is what he says. He says, quote, I've always felt there's something inherently psychopathic about joining the army in peacetime. As far as I'm concerned, people join the army to find out what it's like to kill someone. Now, I'm giving this as an illustration of a simplistic, overly simplistic rendering of the sixth commandment. I hardly think that's an inclination that should be encouraged in modern society. Do you? Jesus Christ did not think so, he says. The commandment, thou shalt not kill, does not have an asterisk beside it, referring you to the bottom of the page where you find a list of instances where it's okay to kill people. To which Milo Herlihy says, what about self-defense? To which Father Lavell says this, that's a tricky one, all right, but we're hardly being invaded, aren't we? Well, that's the kind of mentality. So there are people, it seems like, especially maybe from left-leaning denominations, who would come in and say, this is all very simple. The simple matter is you should adopt absolute pacifism and oppose all killing. And let me just be very confessional with you for a moment. I have found certain theological positions very tempting over the years and have tried very hard to believe in them, but simply could not because of Scripture. Pacifism is one of those. I find pacifism, the idea that all killing is wrong, to be a very attractive, very romantic, terribly naive idea. The idea that in the fallen world we would never have to kill someone is a naive idea. And I've worked hard at being able to say, I would love to be able to say, I really would, like I would love to be able to say, I oppose all war in every circumstance. I just cannot bring myself to do it because in Scripture, the Lord commands killing in certain circumstances. And because in a fallen world, we don't always have the privilege of living out the ideal. There are times even when sometimes we have to do lesser evils to keep greater evils from happening. I think if someone breaks into your house and is trying to kill your children, you should kill the person trying to kill your children. And I think that there is something just and protective in that. And I think that just societies realize that on a societal level, that it is the responsibility of just societies to stop murderous people from killing lots of people, even to the point of killing the people who are trying to kill other people. But for our purposes on this first point, let me just be very, very clear here. This is a simple linguistic fact. The word kill in the Sixth Commandment is not a broad word that prohibits all killing. It is clearly, clearly in context, a specific Hebrew word that seems to apply to the unlawful, unjust taking of innocent life. Secondly, this, number two, human life bearing the image of God is sacred, and the taking of it is only and ever justified when it is God who takes it, or when it is taken in strict harmony with divine principles of justice. Human life bearing the image of God is sacred. Can I get a witness on that? It's sacred. It's even killing a bad man should not be done flippantly, joyfully. Should be done with great tears. Human life bearing the image of God is sacred, and the taking of it is only and ever justified when it is God who takes it, or when it is taken in strict harmony with divine principles of justice. Either God must take life, or our taking of life must be in strict accord with divine principles, clear divine principles of justice. Even given all that I just said, let me now say this. While I personally cannot accept pacifism, but again, would very much like to, because a lot of the people that I read and really respect are pacifists. I have a great deal of respect for Stanley Hauerwas, a very outspoken pacifist. I just think he's mistaken at the end of the day. That being said, I do think it is undeniable that the vast majority of killing we do is sinful. I do. I really do. I think that in Southern conservative culture, we have gotten way too comfortable applauding war and applauding death. I think we should tremble before we kill. Now, some of you may not like that. Some of you secretly think I'm a liberal or a Catholic anyway. I don't really care, but my point is, don't get comfortable with killing. I was in a Chili's, of course. Kind of start almost any story with that, I guess. Where were you? Probably Chili's. I was in a Chili's in Atlanta, Georgia, when the last war in Iraq started. And I remember a cheer going up from the crowd. And on the televisions, they were dropping those daisy cutter bombs. Remember those things? Just terrifying. And it struck me as odd, the cheering and jubilation. Now, maybe we should cheer while dropping large bombs on people. I don't know. It seems to me that the church should be the last people to cheer. If we must kill, we must not kill gladly. Now, you might disagree with me. I understand the power of patriotism. I'm not even trying to comment on whether or not the war is justified. We have numerous people in this church in the military, and I commend them 100%. I really do. I'm not just saying that. I'm not hedging my bets. I'm grateful for our military, and I think there are good Christian men and women in this church in the military who think through the ethics of this in a way that I'll never have to. It's easy for me to stand up here and pontificate, but there are people risking their lives to protect freedom. They have to wrestle with this, and they do. They're not mindless puppets, our soldiers. They think these things through. But I'm talking about from our perspective as observers, I think we should be a lot more careful in applauding the killing of others. Simply put, it is a big deal to kill. It's a serious thing to kill. We should not be giddy about killing. For one thing, because by the nature of war, you can never really kill just the bad guys, can you? Inevitably, you kill some innocent people. We should grieve over those innocent people. Now, does the fact that you inevitably kill innocent people mean that you should never try to kill the bad guys? No. That's a horrible thing to have to say, but no. There are times when the risk of war is necessary because war is necessary to stop evil things from happening. But guys, to act like war is this nice, neat thing to be applauded in a Chili's strikes me as obscene. War at its best is a human tragedy, right? And we should pray that war, when it happens, should be as minimal as possible to achieve certain clearly defined just ends. The whole just war tradition in Christianity is a very interesting tradition. Theologians, and this goes way back, hundreds of years, when people began to ask, when is it permissible to kill in war? It's a very important question. If you don't ask that question, you end up saying this: it's permissible to kill when I want to. Now, there are rules on killing. What are those rules? The rules are that the killing should be to stop an evil, right? The killing should not be like a pastime. For instance, World War II is probably one of the most ethically clear wars. You had a murderous tyrant advancing over Europe, and we moved to stop him. That's fairly clear. Other wars are a lot more murky, especially when natural resources are involved in things like this. Well, the justification for war is pretty limited, but it does exist. There are times to kill, but when we kill, we should always remember that we are killing someone created in the image of God. The men who bombed Pearl Harbor were created in the image of God. They were simply acting in rebellion against that image. Every person who's ever committed an atrocity was created in the image of God. He was simply reacting and acting in rebellion against that image. So even when a person, quote, deserves it, it is a person in the image of God who deserves it. Genesis 1, God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the heavens, over the livestock, over all the earth, over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So God created man in his image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. That's universal. Salvation is not universal. It's only through Christ. But the image of God comes with the human existence. To exist is to bear the image of God. Marred, fallen, obscured by sin. Absolutely, absolutely. Not denying that at all. Absolutely. Clearly marred by sin, but existing nonetheless. Even John Calvin in volume one of the Institutes, who certainly had a low view of human nature, admitted that as Paul admitted in Romans 2, that within even the unregenerate heart, there is some sense, call it prevenient grace, call it what you will, there is some vague sense of right and wrong operative even in the unregenerate heart. Even lost people have some sense. And the general idea is that God allowed that remnant of his image to remain so that human beings would not be debased to an absolute animal state. Imagine if the human conscience did not exist. The conscience is universal. We have a name for people who don't have a conscience. We call them a true psychopath. A true psychopath is someone who kills someone, literally doesn't feel a thing. It's a truly terrifying thing. And there are prisons and mental institutions filled with people like this. But this is the point of the second point. If man is created in the image of God, that means that God has his stamp on all of mankind. That means that God holds the ownership papers to man. And that means that only God can rightly take life or rightly justify human beings taking life in limited circumstances. It also means this, that to murder is to presume to be God. To murder someone is you presuming to be God because you are doing what only God can do. I'll give you an example of this. I've mentioned Pee-wee Gaskins in here before. I won't go through the whole story again. Pee Wee Gaskins is the most prolific serial killer in the history of South Carolina, and I just know that because he's from my hometown. And I've talked about him again before in here. He killed my father's cousin in the late 1960s. I read his autobiography that he dictated to a reporter before he was put to death in the electric chair, and he describes by name killing my father's cousin, my Aunt Ori's daughter. And he killed her because he was trying to kill his own niece. They were walking out of a hamburger place in my hometown. He picked them both up, killed them both, along with numerous other people around Myrtle Beach. And it was kind of in the time when everyone was hitchhiking and stuff like that. He'd pick people up and he'd kill them. Well, this book is a terrifying book. It's the only book I've ever read and then gotten out of my house because I did not want Ronnie or Hannah to come across it and read it. So I sent it to my father, who knows a lot of those people, who read it and got it out of his house. But Pee Wee Gaskins said this. These are his actual words about killing people. He said, quote, "No one and nobody and nothing, no thing can ever touch me. I have walked the same path as God. By taking lives and making others fear me, I become God's equal. Through killing others, I become my own master. Through my own power, I come to my own redemption. Once I seen the miracle light, I didn't ever have to fear or obey the rules of no man or no God." Now my point is this. My point is that Pee Wee Gaskins, while by any account an evil person, had his theology right. He understood. His theology was horribly wrong, but he understood the implications. That if human beings can kill with impunity, it is only because they think they have become God. To kill someone is to elevate yourself to the point of being God. It is a supremely arrogant thing to kill another person. That's why it is wired into most of us who make up society an abhorrence to killing another person. Which should make us think through the movies we watch. I don't remember the exact statistic. I forgot to put it down here. But one of the family groups researched the number of murders that the average child will see until up to the age of 18. Hundreds and hundreds of murders on television and in movies. We should think through why it is that there seems to be a systematic effort to desensitize us to one of the basic human instincts of not killing other people. It's a scary thing. From the video games, to the music, to the movies, to the TV shows, I am as guilty as anyone else. I love that show, Criminal Minds. Every other show's a cop show, isn't it? All of us, probably many of us, most of us, I'm trying to make myself feel better, watch these things. Watch these things. I like that the little nerdy cop on Criminal Minds. You know what I'm talking about? Little nerdy guy. I like him. Cool. So we give ourselves a pass, which leads us to our third point. We give ourselves a pass and tell ourselves that at the least we haven't killed anyone. Would that it were that easy. Point number three, Jesus said we could violate this commandment without ever actually touching another person. We could get off the hook if Jesus had never delivered the Sermon on the Mount. Fortunately for us, he did. Matthew chapter 5, listen. "You have heard that it was said to those of old, 'You shall not murder,'" sixth commandment. "And whoever murders will be liable to judgment. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother